Global Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. And today we have in our studio guest speaker, Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam. The pleasure is all mine.
We were discussing some questions, one of which you said you want to add more points to. The question was about a parent who had a child who he wanted to encourage, you know, to study more, and you gave very interesting points. And you ended up by telling us that we have to, you know, not compare the child with the others. We have to give them priorities, make them feel in charge, give them timetables. And you also said that we don't have to try and tell them what to do all the time. We should try and tell to them nicely, have open and sincere questions with the child, and involve yourself while you're making the child study. So you had more to say, inshallah.
Yes. Another point to take into consideration is focus on your child's interests. Sometimes the child, you know, doesn't feel like studying different books. For example, you'll find that in grade 1, grade 2, he's not very much interested in, you know, subjects like social studies or maybe science or geography. He's least interested. So you don't force the child, but you let him explore the things that is of his interest. So you can know from a child's early age what they look into more. You know, is it like maybe arts? Is it sciences? Is it math? So you develop that interest and, you know, more into him, get him more books. Enjoy with him the fact that, for example, a child might like to really know about dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Encourage him. Yeah, know about, you know, explore them together. Buy him books. Look at different pictures, the names of dinosaurs. Get him coloring books for that if he's very small. Or else find out about, you know, the way the dinosaurs are, do they exist or where they are, what are the names or things like that. So that the child, you know, later on feels like studying more.
Yeah.
In the way that he feels like exploring more in areas like this, so he'll feel inquisitive about many other subjects as well.
And because I think you nurtured that kind of
interest. So many subjects are very interesting. In fact, I feel all subjects are very interesting. And if for example, even religion, if you go see if your child is interested in that, give him books of religion. And, you know, simple books, buy for him illustrative books with pictures so that he can be more interested in that. And as he reads along, he won't find it difficult to study because he'll know how to process himself whilst reading. And, you know, slowly and gradually you'll see him independently studying. So it's important to encourage the area that he wants to study, you know, more. He wants to explore more.
True.
Yeah, but don't suffice to that only. This is a way to open up other options also that, you know, this doesn't confine, don't confine yourself to this only. There's so many things to learn in life. So if this is so interesting, imagine what other things could be interesting.
Yeah.
So you can even, that comes under communication skills, you know. You have to communicate with the child and be open in the fact that maybe the child can relate, you know, that even other subjects could be very interesting. And we can find that out together by you going to the library or looking at different kind of books or sites and seeing what interesting thing we come up with.
Very true. I feel like when you show the child that you're giving importance to what they like, they will then give importance to what you have to say.
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, give and take.
Two-way street, yeah. It's something that is very important for the child to know that you're taking interest in what is important. Not that you want it to be done because it has to be done.
Very true, very true. So, Sister Salma, we're just going to take a short break and we'll continue after it.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio. We have been talking about how to make a child more interested in studying, and you have mentioned very interesting points. One of the things you mentioned was that it's important to focus on your child's interests so that they are, you know, ready to explore other things also. And you said some very interesting points about that. Do you have anything else to say?
Yes, another thing that we should also take into consideration is consider different types of learning styles. So it's not only reading and that's it. There's visual, there's, for example, reading, there's, for example, looking at pictures and learning, there's listening and learning,
yeah.
You know, there's the logical and social kind of studies and learning. There's not only something that, you know, you need to read from page 1 to page, for example, 3 or 10 or 6 or 7, whatever. You should show him some things that are interesting according to the subject that he learns. So, you know, some people even like playing games in the process. So, for example, if it's a spelling test, you can play with him the same spellings, but for example, you know that game that you have to write the name and place and animal with the same letter?
Yeah.
We used to play this when we were young. So in that procedure, the child learns and gets better vocabulary end, you know, if it's English spelling test and the spellings are very broken. So you can, like, you know, play
make
this,
it into a game.
Yeah, make it into a game. So in that way, we can also, you know, like research on this. Okay, what game to play with, you know, what subject. For example, the math, the times table. You can play it in a very beautiful singing game, for example. Yeah. The 1, 2, and 2, 2, 4, 3, 2, 6, 4, 2, 8. And how fast you go through it, you know, things like that. And it becomes like a rhyme that you never forget it. Me personally, I've never forgotten my timetables because you need it all through, So we even started with 13 timetable, and that's very interesting. And you can even solve it in the brain. So with these kind of small games, make it fun for the child. So know that if the child likes listening, maybe give him a clip to listen, that this is about the knowledge, or read and he listens.
That's very interesting, yeah.
Or read together, or he reads to you, or she reads to you, or play a small game, a spelling test, or you read out and she writes, and she reads out and you write, or write it on top of, for example, sand, or write it on top of salt, something that she enjoys doing, or, you know, in the small grades, something that encourages them so much that they feel like they can relate, or write it in the air. You know what you're writing, or for example, give a question to him while in actions. Like pretend to be deaf and dumb, and say, how would you pose a question to them? And that fun would come in them, you know, that spirit would become more enhanced to learn faster. So considering the different learning styles is very important. That comes with knowledge and awareness of your child. You can't, you know, like just a mother who is so indifferent to her child will never be able to help a child. A mother needs to be interested in the child, not only things that are necessary for him to continue existing as far as food and water and clothes are concerned, you know, that makes his life easier. these things, as far as the spirituality, mental progress is concerned, is of paramount importance.
Yeah.
For him to succeed in life, for him to feel wanted and motivated in life to do everything, not only studying. You know, when that studying comes, I think he's got the 100 of it, the motivation of studying, because everything comes under that. The motivation of studying helps you to be motivated in many fields. Wanting to do, for example, your ibadah properly, wanting to make friends. All this comes under the fact that you have studied properly, you feel like studying, because it's something that really involves mental activity.
True, true.
So if that is done at a young age, then he will continue very far, getting a lot of progress in future also, in many matters.
And I think one thing I've understood till now is that, so in the end, if we want our child to want to study and love studying, then we have to be the ones to put more effort. Like the parent is supposed to try and put more effort.
Yes.
If they just go and expect the child to be, you know, to study and to do everything perfectly, then it's unfair on the child.
Yes, yes. In fact, the child doesn't know the value of studying so much, but the parent has to inculcate that value.
Very true. So we're going to stop for another short break and we will continue soon.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, Honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back to IRIB English Radio, and we have been discussing about some very interesting questions. Sister Salma, you said that for a child to want to study, you know, you should consider different types of learning styles, look at what's necessary for the child. What else?
Yes, you know, such things are so important in life. That's why I've pointed them out, many points that the parents should keep into, you know, consideration about this so that they can really see some results in the child. As far as interest in education is concerned, because education is something that really makes man a man. Man is a person who thinks and he decides and he's exclusive from all the creatures and he's also the best of creatures, you know, mankind. Because why? Intellection, thinking. So it's very important to enhance this from a young age. And it'll go on so far and the children will thank you for it. So that's why I'm a bit prolonging this so that we can know every piece of it, you know, so that the puzzle fits and we have a good, inshallah, result in the end. So another point is that to show your child the passion for learning. You know, how does this come, you think? It comes when the mother is also passionate about learning.
Mm.
For example, if it's time for homework, she can put it in indirect way. What was there in science today that, you know, we need to know?
Hmm.
Anything new that I don't know about it? Make it so passionate, you know. And when you explain, even, for example, if he didn't understand or she didn't understand, maybe they said, I'm not interested because I didn't understand anything. Then look it up and then make them understand in such a beautiful, passionate way that they feel interested in this thing. You know, there were some subjects when I was a child, they were so boring. But the teacher was so interesting that we feel the subject was so interesting.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
So history was quite boring. Our history of our country, for example. But the way it was explained, maybe it was so beautiful, dramatized, you know, the scenario was there in our minds. So it was something that really felt that, you know, like a tangibility that, yeah, this happened. We can imagine this happened. I remember a literature book that we read was so boring, the literature book, but we did a play on that.
Oh, wow.
So the play was something like so like unique for me that I felt, I know this part, this, and then after this part comes this. We had to revise a lot of things for that. There was a lot of lessons to learn also, but it was something that is so ordinary literature when I compare to the books of Shuhada that we have right now and the beautiful books that we have, ulama stories. That is pure literature. That is something to, you know, get satisfaction from. That is something that you need a lifelong lesson. So that is something to be passionate about. In the end, we want that for our children, don't we?
Yeah.
So
I think it also kind of removes that laziness because It's very easy to get lazy and not want to do all of this. This shows that you have to put a lot of effort, and it gets hard, but
now it's upon the parent.
Yeah.
You know, when a child is young and you do all this, you'll see there comes a point in time that the child self-studies.
True.
You wonder, I've experienced that with my older child, that when it was always that I had to sit with him, buy dictionaries, translated because he was in an Arabic school. So it was very hard for me also. So I was also learning together.
Yeah.
So at a point in time, I was getting a bit frustrated, but I was always telling Allah to help me. And I noticed that, alhamdulillah, it was so much a motivation for him. In the end, he actually told me, I'm self-studying. And I saw that his grades had improved more than when I was studying with him.
Wow.
So it was something that, you know, needs to be instilled first, and then you get the fruits about and off. And of course, it comes with passion. Passion of learning is very important. Don't make a subject to appear dry. Make it something that is worthwhile to learn in every field, and how to apply that also. So sometimes, you know, children don't know how to apply it. Everything that they learn, I feel a creative mother can come up with how to, you know, apply it.
True.
In any way, for example, science, you know, how the growth comes about. You can grow something and make it, you know, like applicable. Or something like biology, okay? You can also, you know, tell them that we are experiencing that just now. What is happening
to
ourselves? Exactly. Experimenting. Or math, you know, for example, like teaching them practically how to, you know, do that mathematical problem. All these things, of course, require time and diligence and passion.
Very true, Ahsan. I think that it's very interesting, and like you said, I think if we try and put more effort, it's possible. But I think also one more thing, it's very important that we choose a good school then for our child.
Yeah,
otherwise,
that's right.
We won't reach these goals that
we
want to
good
achieve.
School is of paramount importance, no doubt about that.
Inshallah that we all try. Thank you very much. And it was very lovely talking about these very important, you know, topics. And we hope to continue this in the next episode, inshallah, if you'll be available.
Do you know Islam says, it says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
In the limelight.
While over 90% of people in Gaza cannot find their next meal, some UN Security Council member states are still toying with words rather than voting for a ceasefire. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, Oxfam's West Asia North Africa regional director, Sally Abi Khalil, said in a statement, Gaza's shocking descent into starvation was so predictable as to be premeditated, an ongoing war crime by the government of Israel. Abu Khalil's statement was a reaction to the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification IPC report, also published recently, which warned of an impending famine in Gaza. Oxfam's regional director said, "This is irrefutable proof that Israel's attacks have decimated Gaza's already fragile food system so catastrophically that most people are no longer able to feed themselves and their families," adding, "People are being starved in Gaza. Unless there is an immediate ceasefire and a massive scale-up of humanitarian aid, Gaza risks being pushed into a famine." According to Gaza's Ministry of Health, 20,050 Palestinians have been killed, and 53,320 wounded in the Zionist regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza starting October 7. Palestinian and international estimates say that the majority of those killed and wounded are women and children. According to WFP, more than one in four households in Gaza currently face extreme hunger, and there is a risk of famine unless access to adequate food, clean water, health and sanitation services are restored, according to a new integrated food security phase classification report released recently. IPC is a multi-stakeholder platform that analyzes data to determine the severity and magnitude of hunger crises, according to internationally recognized scientific standards. This latest food security analysis for Gaza, which includes data from the World Food Programme, WFP, other UN agencies and non-governmental organizations, confirmed that the entire population of Gaza, roughly 2.2 million people, are in crisis or worse levels of acute food insecurity. The IPC report further highlighted that 26% of Gazans, about 576,600 people, have exhausted their food supplies and coping capacities and face catastrophic hunger and starvation. Cindy McCain, WFP's executive director, said WFP has warned of this coming catastrophe for weeks. Tragically, without the safe, consistent access we have been calling for, the situation is desperate and no one in Gaza is safe from starvation. According to the IPC, there is a risk of famine occurring within the next 6 months if the current situation of intense conflict and restricted humanitarian access persists. From earlier assessments, WFP food security experts had already established that Gazans have used up all their resources, livelihoods have collapsed, bakeries are destroyed, shops are empty, and families can't find food. People told WFP staff that they often go entire days without eating and that many adults go hungry so that children can eat. WFP chief economist Arif Hussein said, "These are not just numbers. There are individual children, women and men behind these alarming statistics. The complexity, magnitude and speed that this crisis has unfolded is unprecedented. More emergency food and multi-sectoral assistance is essential to prevent widespread deaths. The recent 7-day pause highlighted that WFP and partners can provide assistance when the conditions allow. And the reopening of Kerem Shalom border crossing sets the stage for more food and other relief supplies to flow into Gaza, which needs to continue and accelerate with additional border crossings and operating conditions inside Gaza that allow for safe and orderly deliveries to all people in need." McCain said, "We cannot stand by and watch people starve. Humanitarian access is needed now for supplies to flow into and throughout Gaza and for civilians to safely receive life-saving aid. More than anything, what is needed now is peace." WFP reiterates the call for a humanitarian ceasefire. The world must come together now to save Palestinian lives.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, trustworthiness. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Trustworthiness is one of the Islamic duties, and all Muslims are required to keep it carefully. Allah the Most High said, But if one of you trusts another, then he who is trusted should deliver his trust, and let him be careful of his duty to Allah the Lord. The major responsibility is on the shoulder of the one who is trusted. Brothers and sisters, there are certain people around us who trust us in different matters, right? For instance, our family members, they trust us to provide for their sustenance and their livelihood, right? Our kids, they're dependent on us, so they're expecting that, and they basically trust us in that arena. That fulfillment of that promise, you know, the unsaid promise, even in some cases, the natural expectations, it is a responsibility and duty of a person who's being trusted. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, surely Allah commands you to make over trusts to their owners. Notice again, Allah uses the word command. In Arabic language, you don't have to use the word command to give a command. Arabic grammar has different methods to command someone. Yet, Allah uses the word command in this verse of the Holy Quran. It can be inferred that this word is used explicitly to emphasize and stress on the command of Allah. And what is the command of Allah? To be trustworthy, right? Take care of the trust on your shoulders. You know, be reliable. Be someone who can count on you. So this trust is a command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala upon us. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the topic of trustworthiness. In Islamic lifestyle, trustworthiness has a very high value. Who doesn't wish to be successful in both the lives? You know, one may ask. I would say everybody. You know, if you ask them, everybody would say they want to be successful. We can claim that generally speaking, everyone wishes to be successful. What is the key to this success? That's a $1 million question, right? Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, successful indeed are the believers, those who are keepers of their trusts and their covenant. Again, notice how being trustworthy and keeping covenants is the path to success. If somebody is not trustworthy, in other words, or they don't keep up with their promises and their commitments and their covenants, then chances are high that they will never get to the path of success. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also said, surely Allah does not love the treacherous. So is there a relationship between belief and being trustworthy? You may ask this question, right? The Holy Prophet, Prophet of Allah, said, there is no belief for him who is not trustworthy. So if you're not reliable, if you're not trustworthy, if you're not Amin in your dealings, then chances are high, according to this narration, that your belief is absent or incomplete. The Prophet of Allah also said, he who is unfaithful to a trust and does not deliver it to its owner until he passes away, his death is with a religion other than what I brought, and Allah will meet him angrily. So in other words, that person did not die on Islam. And what can be more difficult for a Muslim and a believer that Allah meets him angrily?
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salaamu alaikum, dear listeners. Hope you're doing well. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. And this is Youth Station. I'm your host, Hassanain, and we have our co-host with us.
Yeah, I'm here. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, and my brother.
Alaikum assalam.
I am Beta, and once again, we are here at Youth Station, our sweet home.
Hope you're doing well, sister.
Thank you. You too.
And hope our audience is doing well as well.
So, what's the hot topic of today's episode?
Let's begin. Sister, many people come in a life, they stay or they leave.
Yeah.
But they say, family or relatives are someone that you cannot choose.
Yeah.
But friends are someone you can choose who your friends to be.
Yeah, this is the beautiful difference between these two, that you can choose yourself who are your friends. And friendship, I think, actually is something that can enrich your life and improve your personality depending on how you choose people. That famous sentence that, tell me who your friends are and I'm going to tell who you are. Yeah,
right.
This is the same thing about actually this topic and the thing that we are discussing, that friends are really important.
Friends are actually a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, this is the major difference between family and friends. Family, you have your family. Like, who is your family? That's your family.
Yeah.
But friends, you can choose who you want them to be. So, and also there is a narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam that where he was discussing the difference between a brother and a friend. Like he said, brother is like gold. You know, if there's a crack between you and him, gold can be, it can be melted and bring back to its, original
shape.
Yeah, original shape. But the friend is like a diamond. If it breaks, it's very hard or like it's impossible to, get it back to its original form.
Nice. It was a really nice narration. I think it takes the time to think deeply on that. And a beautiful example. I'm not a really social person. I'm like...
Introvert
or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I don't have a lot of friends. And like, for example, tell you that I'm always hanging out with my friends and something like that. No, I've never experienced something like that in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some maybe like 4 or 5 people in my life that I call them friends of mine. And, it was really cautious and, insightful choosing these people as my friends because, this is a little world, so I have to work on that in the details. So how about you? You seem like to be an extrovert person.
Yeah, on the other hand, I'm an extrovert person, be it anywhere. I'm in a college, I'm in a university, I'm at an event, I just, start talking to random people.
I envy you.
Yeah, so I have many friends. But the thing about friends and the other people is, it may be that, I communicate with a lot of people. It may be that, I go out with a lot of people.
So you
I
don't
meet a lot
call
of people.
All of them friend, do you?
No. That's the difference.
So we have to have a definition of who is the friend.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. I meet a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But not everybody's friend. Friend is are those, special... Like 4 or 5 people in my life.
People.
Yeah. And before carrying on, let's take a short break and discuss more about friends.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back to your listeners, and before the break we were discussing about friends. I would say friends are the good part of our life. Like, you know, friends are people. Friends are people that we chose them to be with us, or we chose ourselves to be with them. There was no necessity. I mean, there was no force. We, of course, like, we chose them to be our friends, right?
Yeah.
Like, they were not forced upon us. You know, I chose this guy. I chose XYZ to be my friend. So friends are someone like, you know, I go to office, I go to college, you know, I work through the entire day. And when evening I'm tired, I go and see my friend. We go for a coffee and we discuss, like, you know, that's, you just, you know, it relaxes you.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, friend is someone really special. You know, we communicate with a lot of people every day, everywhere you go, but none of them are your friends. I actually define friend as someone that I talk to about my hidden parts of my life. And, you know, you have some parts to yourself about your life, about your beliefs, about your wishes, hopes, and everything related to your personality that you keep to yourself. So when you meet a friend, you share even a little part of these things with that person.
Yeah, like, friends are someone, like, we're comfortable with.
Yeah, they are.
Like, we share our thoughts with them.
But, you know, when you communicate with these friends and you spend your time with them, they have their own effects on your personality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, if they are rude, they will become, they will actually make you a rude person after a long term.
Mm-hmm. So these are the side effects of friendship.
Having friends, that you can use them in a good way. I mean, you can choose good people, so they have good effects on you. So what is your actually criteria and standards for choosing someone as a friend?
Before choosing someone as friends, the last one you mentioned about having an impact on friends.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would like to say over here that, like, the two apples, right? You know, if one's rotten and you keep the other, like, apple, which one's good?
Next to that, the other one got rotten too.
So we shouldn't be like that apple.
Yeah.
You know, that you know, that spoils due to its environment and its, you know, surroundings.
Yeah, it's the same thing for human beings' personalities.
Yeah, so we should be the other way around. Like, you know, if we see that there's something bad attributes, you know, something from the bad attributes we see in our friends. So we shouldn't adopt that as well.
But
in fact, we should try to change it.
You know, there are some situations that cannot get to know people. I mean, they wear masks and they hide their true self under so many beautiful features and things. And they cannot understand that bad feature after a long, long time. So what should you do in these kind of situations?
Of course, this world is a place of deception. But actually, if you actually don't know that who that person is, you don't know who that the real himself is. So I don't think he's your, like, friend. You know, you just hang out. You guys talk to each other. You know, friends are someone I feel like you're comfortable with. You know, you can share anything with them, and you know, they won't judge you. Okay, let's get back to your question.
Yeah.
You said, like, you know, the criteria for choosing friends, right? Okay, first of all, like, how do we choose our friends? You know, how do we make friends? For example, if I go to, you know, if I start my college, you know, it's the first day of my college, like, there are 50 students in a classroom. Like, all of them, no one knows each other. They're all new to the class. So out of this, like, 50 years... out of all these 50 students, you know, for suppose example, your university is 4 years. It takes 4 years. At the end of your college, at the end of your university, how many friends do you have?
Less than three, I think.
Three, right? Exactly. So, you know all of them. You know, 50 people. You know, you have lived with them. You meet them every day for 4 years.
Yeah.
So, but at the end, you just have three friends. Why? Let's discuss this after the break.
Okay.
Welcome back, dear listeners. And before the break, we were discussing the interesting journey of making friends. So we said that in the university, in our classroom, we have 50 students that we see every day. But at the end of the course, at the end of our university, we just have 3 or 4 friends, or 5 maybe, or 10. But
10 is a lot.
Yeah, but not. But why not all of them? So what's the reason? What do you think the reason is over here?
You know, because when communicating with people that are, you know, so highlighted in your life, you have some structures, you have some criteria, you have some red lines that if you see, for example, that person is crossing a red line several times, often and often, then it's the time for you to unmeet that person from your circle of communication. And this is the thing, at least I do in my life, and I have so many strict, so many restricted, actually, red lines that if I see people crossing them or trying to cross them, or I don't know, even if I see people they don't care, then I think it's not a good person to communicate with so much. The first thing for me, which is really important, is respect. Because, you know, when people feel close to each other, they use curse words. We are disrespecting each other in the cover of joking and humor. Which is not something acceptable for me, at least. I think this is the most important criteria for
me. The fact you're saying that, you know, this is for me and so might not be for some others.
Yeah.
So it means like, you know, everyone has got their own choices. Like everyone has got their own norms. In our example where we mentioned like 50 students, right? So we just mentioned 50 students. But the thing is, thing that has to be noticed over here is 50 students means 50 minds. And 50 minds means 50 ideologies and 50 ways of thinking.
Yeah,
so there are 50 different ideologies in one room. So I guess what I feel, the first initial step of making friends is, you know, I'm new to the classroom. I see 50 people around me, including me, myself, of course. What I try to do is, you know, I try to find the people, you know, the like-minded people.
Yeah.
You know, the people of my taste. You know, this is what people do and make friends. You know, the 50 people, I would see, like, you know, who has got, you know, I've got a certain level of sense of humor.
Yeah.
So I look into the people, like, you know, who has a good humor. So, you know, I try to be close with him.
Nice.
Like, for example, you know, I like being respected. I look for the people like, you know, who gives me respect, like who's polite.
Yeah, I like your strategy.
Yeah, this is, you know, I like math very much. So I look and see, like, you know, who loves math as well, like who's good in math.
Nice.
So we can, you know, grow together.
Exactly. And another thing I wanted to mention was from Islamic perspective that your friend should be your mirror. Someone to tell your flaws, to tell you what you're doing wrong, what you're doing right, and so many other factors. And this is a really true friendship. Someone who helps you to develop yourself, to actually lead you to the self-improvement path.
Yeah, I know, right? That's actually a very beautiful narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam. The thing is, when Imam Ali says that, you know, a friend is supposed to be a mirror to other friend. One thing to notice over here, like the interpretation that scholars do over here is, you know, a mirror is something that shows you your flaws. But the one thing not to be forgotten over here, that it shows the flaws to the only person who is standing, you know, in front of the mirror. See, it's something like, you know, in front of everybody, like in gossips, oh, this guy, you know, no, he's got this problem. You know, he's weak in this. You know, you don't have to discuss it. It's not a podcast. You know, you're discussing their problem with everyone. We have to be mindful, as sister also mentioned in the beginning, that, you know, tell me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are.
Exactly.
So, you know, company really matters. You know, the people you live around with, the people you're every time with, or the people you roam around with, your friends tell a lot about you. So we need to be mindful, and we need to, you know, make good friends. And last but not the least, we need to have good impact on our friends.
Nice.
And it should not be vice versa. Like, you know, we are having the bad impact from our friends. If we see that there's some problem in our friends, so we should try to change it.
Exactly.
And if we have any problem in ourselves, our friends should change it. So that's it for today. And with that being said, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Allah. Ya Allah. Ya Allah.
Allah, in the limelight.
A new opinion survey has found that President Joe Biden's year-end approval rating is worse than any other modern-day U.S. president seeking re-election. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. U.S. magazine Newsweek has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. Republicans are calling on President Joe Biden to be removed from state presidential ballots following a Colorado court ruling that former President Donald Trump is not permitted to be on the ballot paper next year. In a 4-3 decision on Wednesday, 20th of December, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that the former President Donald Trump violated the 14th Amendment, which bars public officials from holding federal office if they have engaged in an insurrection. In November, a lower court in Colorado had agreed with the plaintiffs, a group of Colorado voters, including Norma Anderson, a petitioner and former Republican majority leader of the Colorado House and Senate, that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection because of his behavior during the riot at the Capitol on 6th of January 2021. During the insurrection, Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building in protest at his election loss. Donald Trump, the frontrunner for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, has denied all wrongdoing and has not been charged with insurrection. He has argued that courts of law do not have the authority to bar candidates from the ballot paper under the constitutional provision. Now, some Republicans have said President Biden, too, should be removed from state ballots, though it is not clear on what constitutional grounds. Anthony Sabatini, a Republican running for Congress in Florida's 11th District, who previously served as a Florida state representative, wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter, "Remove Joe Biden from the Florida ballot right now." In an interview with Fox News Channel, Texas's Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick also suggested that President Biden should be removed from his state's 2024 ballot due to his administration's response to immigration at the U.S.-Mexico border. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick stressed, "Seeing what happened in Colorado makes me think, except we believe in democracy in Texas, maybe we should take Joe Biden off the ballot in Texas for allowing 8 million people to cross the border since he's been president, disrupting our state." Political commentator Gunther Eagleman posted on X that President Biden should be removed from Texas ballot after the Colorado ruling. Peachy Keenan, a conservative commentator and author, took it a step further, writing on X, "All red states should immediately petition their courts to remove Joe Biden from the ballot." The Colorado Supreme Court said in its ruling that a majority of the court holds that President Trump is disqualified from holding the office of president under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. It added, former President Trump did not merely incite the insurrection. Even when the siege on the Capitol was fully underway, he continued to support it by repeatedly demanding that Vice President Mike Pence refuse to perform his constitutional duty and by calling on senators to persuade them to stop the counting of electoral votes. These actions constituted overt, voluntary and direct participation in the insurrection. Reacting to the ruling, the Trump campaign spokesperson Stephen Chung said they would be appealing against the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. Chung said in a statement, unsurprisingly, the all-Democrat-appointed Colorado Supreme Court has ruled against President Trump, supporting a George Soros-funded left-wing group scheme to interfere in an election on behalf of crooked Joe Biden by removing President Trump's name from the ballot and eliminating the rights of Colorado voters to vote for the candidate of their choice. Trump campaign spokesman Stephen Chung added, Democratic Party leaders are in a state of paranoia over the growing dominant lead President Trump has amassed in the polls. They have lost faith in the failed Biden presidency and are now doing everything they can to stop the American voters from throwing them out of office next November. The Colorado Supreme Court issued a completely flawed decision recently, and we will swiftly file an appeal to the United States Supreme Court and a concurrent request for a stay of this deeply undemocratic decision. We have full confidence that the U.S. Supreme Court will quickly rule in our favor and finally put an end to these un-American lawsuits. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered the same story and tells us more. The House GOP recently formalized its impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden with a House vote, a step Republicans hope will add legal weight to their demands as the probe moves into a more aggressive end stage. Lawmakers voted 221-212 along party lines to approve the resolution authorizing the inquiry. Earlier in the day, Hunter Biden, President Joe Biden's son, who is at the center of the many lines of inquiry, defied a Republican subpoena to appear for a deposition. Republicans leading the probe said that his refusal reinforces the need for a formal vote. The resolution makes official an inquiry into President Biden that has been underway for months after former Speaker Kevin McCarthy in September said various GOP probes into the president would be under the umbrella of impeachment, but did not hold an official vote. Republicans have said they moved to formalize the inquiry in part because the White House responded to document requests last month with a letter that argued their inquiry was unconstitutional due to a lack of a vote, citing a Trump-era legal opinion. House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, Republican of Kentucky, who is leading one of the arms of the probe, said, "We're very pleased with the vote today. I think that's a message loud and clear to the White House. We expect you to comply." President Joe Biden ripped House Republicans for what he called a baseless political stunt. Biden claimed in a lengthy statement issued minutes after the House voted along party lines to formalize the inquiry, Joe Biden said, "I wake up every day focused on the issues facing the American people, real issues that impact their lives and the strength and security of our country. Unfortunately, House Republicans are not joining me." The multi-pronged impeachment inquiry includes deep dives into the personal and business finances of the Biden family, as well as heaping scrutiny on a Justice Department probe into Hunter Biden's failure to pay his taxes. Fox News Channel has also covered the same story. A new survey found President Joe Biden's year-end approval rating is worse than any other modern-day U.S. president seeking re-election. According to December polling from Gallup, Joe Biden's approval rating sits at 39%. By comparison, former President Donald Trump's approval rating sat at 45% when he was seeking re-election in 2019. And former President Barack Obama's approval rating was 43% in 2011. Gallup noted that former President George W. Bush was supported by 58% of survey respondents at this time in his re-election cycle, likely aided by the mid-December capture of the former Iraqi dictator Saddam in 2003. According to the survey giant, former Presidents Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush each had 51% support whilst vying for a second term in office, and former President Ronald Reagan's approval rating was 54% back in 1983, tied with former President Jimmy Carter in 1979. Gallup wrote, Biden enters 2024 with a persistently low job approval rating, the worst of any modern-day U.S. president, heading into a tough re-election campaign.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. The greatness of this event, the Sacred Defense, must be recognized. Much has been done in this field. Books have been written, films have been made, and memoirs have been narrated. However, in my opinion, there is still much more room for work to be done. Up until now, we have not been able to recognize or make known the details of this great, colorful painting. We are looking at it from a distance. But if we look at it closely, we will find that in every piece of it, there is so much beauty, so many fine points, and so much meaning and depth that one is amazed. Each piece of it is like this, and this information must be made known to people. Of course, I obviously do not intend to carry out this goal in this meeting. It is impossible. It is a large, extensive, comprehensive task. Nevertheless, I would like to speak about some aspects of it.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We want the greatness of this event to be known. The greatness of this event can be looked at from several angles and perspectives. One of its angles concerns what was being defended, because we are talking about a sacred defense. So what are we defending? That's the first issue. If we look at it from this angle, an important part of the greatness of this event will become apparent. Another angle is who was the defense confronting? Who was it that had attacked us that necessitated a defense? This is another angle which I think is important. The third perspective or angle is who were the defenders? This is also a novel and important thing that I will mention two or three sentences about. The fourth angle is what were the results and achievements of this defense. Now, I have mentioned these four aspects, but of course, it can be viewed from other angles as well.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me.